You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Chris from the All Creatures Podcast. Just doing a quick intro for this roundtable discussion we had with Corbin Maxey, who has been a great friend to the podcast from our very early days. And we've done some previous roundtables with Corbin before, and they're just so much fun to bring in a special guest and for the three of us just to kind of sit around and chew on a topic. And so we've been meaning to do one with Corbin. And right now, you know, since we're all at home, it was a perfect time for us to talk about this crazy documentary that is trending here in the United States and I think around the world, and it's called Tiger King. And if you don't know what that is, you can just do a quick Google search and there's a million stories about it, but really kind of follows this so-called quote-unquote zoo in Oklahoma owned by this pretty funny character. You know, we'll talk more about him in the podcast a little bit, Joe Exotic. And at one time, I believe he owned over 230 tigers on this so-called zoo. And so it's really got a lot of conversations going with not only zoos, accredited zoos, reputable zoos, but also animal sanctuaries here in the United States, which I know, you know, are prevalent around the world. So we spend a good, hour and a half with Corbin. Talking a lot about this. We do talk a little bit about the human interest side of it and have some fun with that, but really focused on the animal's perspective. And, you know, that's the lens Angie and I and Corbin all kind of looked at it, and how these animals were cared for and the laws here in the United States, and maybe in your country too, you know, where people own large cats like tigers as pets. And we talk about the ethics of that and how these animals are cared for. So a very in-depth discussion, heated at times, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, I think we could have kept going for a couple hours, to be honest, talking about this particular issue. So hopefully you really enjoy it. And just a couple notes before you do, realize tigers in the wild are suffering horribly. There is less than 4,000, they think anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 adult tigers in the wild. And you're talking from Indonesia all the way up to Siberia, because there are 6 subspecies of tigers. And we talk a little bit about that, tiger conservation. And there are more tigers in the United States held as pets or at these private zoos than there are in the wild. There are more tigers held privately in China than there are in the wild. So, you know, we kind of touch upon some of that too, and really hope you enjoy it. One announcement I want to make is this Thursday we'll be releasing an interview, which is a nice comparison to this so-called zoo and shown in this documentary, Tiger King. And that's with Angie's own husband, John. And we talk a lot about accreditation, what that means here in the United States of zoos. And we also talk about accreditation of international zoos, as many listeners have emailed us asking, you know, what's a good zoo? So we kind of touch upon that too with John on Thursday. So look for that. It's a great comparison to what went on in this documentary on, you know, accredited zoos. And even Corbin talks about some that aren't accredited that do take really good care of their animals. I will also say, if you want to know about a good solid sanctuary for tigers, in our episode 92, we interviewed Katie Cannon from Carolina Tiger Rescue, and you can listen to that interview to find out what a real sanctuary is and what that means. And I think that will give you some good perspective. And then just always make sure to follow, you know, Corbin's podcast animals to the max. And then also follow Corbin on social media. He has a TikTok video that's got over 5 million views. He's a superstar. Follow him on Facebook, follow his podcast, and follow him on Instagram and TikTok. Just a wonderful friend and an amazing wildlife educator. And his podcast does a lot to bring in a different perspective, wonderful interviews. So I highly suggest you listen to him. And hopefully you enjoy this podcast, and we'll be back next week. Hey, Corbin.
How are you?
Good to be back.
You guys, I'm not going to lie. I'm not blowing smoke. Our roundtable discussions are probably some of my favorite episodes on the show.
I know. We've been dying to do another one with you. We just get so busy. But now we have all the time in the world. So.
Right. Yes. And you reached out to me about this tabletop discussion. At first, I was like, well, I don't know if I'll have time. And then I watched all episodes of The Tiger King in like 2 days. So I made time. It went by very quickly. Let's just say that. So I'm glad that you reached out. These discussions are always amazing. So yeah, hopefully everybody will have a good time.
Yeah. And I have to say, when I first, saw Tiger King, I immediately, messaged Chris on Instagram. I was like, we have to do a roundtable about this because it's one of those things. It's taken the nation by storm. It was like number one trending in Netflix. It is insane. And so I'm so happy you guys agreed. I know we have a lot of the same, fan base, but for those of my listeners who aren't familiar with the All Creatures podcast, by the way, one of my favorite animal podcasts, I absolutely love it. Please subscribe to their show. But please tell us just a little bit about the show and maybe yourselves and why you two are qualified to talk about the Tiger King.
Well, I think, Angie and I both have our PhDs in animal physiology, behavior, and
welfare.
Yeah. And so we, a couple years ago came together and decided to start the show because we're really concerned with what's going on around the planet with endangered species. So, the premise of the show is we generally cover an endangered species a week, and then we try to speckle in some interviews with experts. Like we've had Corbin on multiple times and science researchers from around the world. So,
We've been throughout the 2 years too. We've been able to talk to a lot of tiger experts, and so definitely a big disclaimer for this evening's pod is some of it's going to be factual, probably a little bit's going to be sprinkled with opinions, and I'm more of an expert working in an accredited zoological park because that's how I got my start years ago before I went into grad school. So I have an interesting ability to understand more the in-depth protocols and procedures that go on behind the scenes in your accredited zoos. But I've learned a lot along the way about sanctuaries. I've interviewed Katie Cannon from Carolina Tiger Rescue, who is an expert in sanctuaries, and this is an accredited facility. And I was just re-listening to that podcast in preparation for this, and it's excellent. She just breaks it all down. So that'll be a good one that we'll need to share with people. But I definitely am not an expert in private breeders, and I'm also not an expert in tigers. That's more of my husband's. I always worked with hooves and horns, but throughout doing this pod, Chris and I have covered a lot of wildcats, and like I said, I interviewed Dr. Sunarto out in Indonesia about Sumatran tigers and his research for World Wildlife Fund, and hearing what it's like to be a tiger conservationist out in the field, and really hearing how much trouble they are in the wild. And so yes, that's I don't know if tiger expert's the word, but I definitely became an expert on this Tiger King documentary.
Sure. And
I had my I was like such a dork, and I know Chris is the same. I had my laptop off. Oh my goodness. Okay, let me type that down. I'll look that up later. Oh, Chris is showing me his notes right now. Yeah. So Chris and I are researchers by heart, by trade. And so we, of course, went down a couple rabbit holes about what is really going on here. And hopefully we'll be able to share some insights.
And just really quick, our tigers, we covered it actually in two episodes because we covered so much. So episode 83 and 85, Sunarto's interviews, episode 85. Or 84, sorry. And then episode 92 was Katie Cannon. So we've had four episodes devoted just to tigers.
Yeah.
And Angie and I, just really quick, want to say this too. We've had an animal ag background as well with domestic livestock. And I've seen some animals abused, held in terrible conditions, mainly horses. And that's not the norm in animal ag. Like, we've gone out, I've seen multiple farms doing research and also some behavior studies. I just want to say this, in the United States, most animals in animal agriculture are very well taken care of, because that's the farmer's bottom line. These horrific videos you see every now and then, it's an oddity, or it's from outside the country. But with that being said, when you look at how these tigers are housed, I was horrified. And I think we're not coming from an animal rights perspective at all, because that's not what we talk about. Angie and I are big in animal conservation. This is an animal welfare issue. Huge animal welfare issue. And I think that's what we're going to talk a lot about today.
I think so. And it's so controversial. And I actually put a video out on IGTV. I was so nervous because it's like, when you put this stuff out in the world, there's so many touchy topics, and it seems like everybody and their mom has an opinion, which everyone is entitled to their opinions. You know, we're going to be sharing our opinions, but you know, I just felt like we need to expand and talk about some things, because, you know, a lot of people are questioning the ethics of zoos and anti-captivity and go ahead.
Well, no, I just think our opinions, like my father used to say, are, you know what, everybody's got one. So they're everybody's got one, and they can be a pain. But mm-hmm. I like to approach it from, if there's no evidence behind it, there's no research behind it, which some of this stuff there is, and we'll talk about that today. I at least like the opinion to be informed and perhaps open-minded. And so maybe when people listen to this interview, if they were on one side or the other, perhaps they'll at least have some more facts or a little bit more informed opinions to be open about perhaps making changes. Because in the end, I think everybody wants there to be tigers in the wild, right? Everybody mm-hmm. likes tigers, even if we fear them because they're so powerful and maybe they make you fearful. But most people want them to live in the wild. And so I think that's what we're going to be talking about today, is some issues with what's going on with that. And then when they are under human care, whether they're in a zoo, a sanctuary, under private ownership, what does that mean? And mm-hmm. knowing what I know about zoos, I've known forever, is not all zoos are made the same. And then throughout the past couple of years, I've been educated a lot about the not two sanctuaries are the same. And perhaps, much to some people's dismay, I will also say that not all private ownership is the same. Mm-hmm. And with private ownership, you have breeders, and then you have people that just have tigers as pets. So making sweeping generalized assumption that all zoos are bad or all sanctuaries are amazing or mm-hmm. whatever is, I think, is a fallacy. And so the best way, or one of my goals today, is to at least help put some education out there to give listeners who aren't as familiar with the tiger crisis, both in the United States and then, of course, in Asia, or what's happening here, so they can make okay. more informed decisions. So there's a lot to talk about today.
Yes. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say, should we just start with how tigers are doing in the wild? I mean,
I think so. Really quick, though, for those of you living underneath a rock, if someone's tuning in like, Tiger King, wait, what in the in God's name are they talking about? Basically, a brief synopsis. And please, you know, join in. It's basically Netflix focuses on one man. I kind of made the joke. Joe Dirt. Not really. His name's – thank you. Did I get a laugh? Joe Exotic. It's this guy. He basically has a roadside zoo in Oklahoma. He has a lot of exotic animals. Calls himself the Tiger King, and it focuses on his operation and his conflicts with the big cat rescue down in Florida. And there's a lot of twists and turns, and it is, if you haven't seen it, I mean, it's a nail biter.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also, it's also true with a lot of those documentaries to know, and I don't want to say watch it with a grain of salt, because I think especially the last like 30 seconds is my favorite, because that's when they pretty much talk about, the only time they talk a lot about tiger conservation and what's going on in the wild. But it's drama, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of, they're painting a certain picture, which was really easy to paint with these characters on this show. Because characters is being mild. But I think it's something to think about too, is what, you know, what was the what's the movie's point and what is it and what's it trying to do? And I got the feeling, and I don't know about your guys' opinion, but I got the feeling that the main mission of the movie was probably not necessarily to tell the story about exotic cat ownership in the United States. I think it was more to showcase
human interest story.
Like the people involved how it gets the way it gets. Because quite frankly, I'm going to be honest, the director of My Old Zoo, if that person was interviewed, they'd probably get cut. They would be so
boring
and scientific and on point and put together and have teeth that it would just be like they'd be cut. They wouldn't make it. And so, because that was one thing I thought was definitely missing, is there wasn't really very many other zoo representatives on there. Probably, did they try to get them? Did they not? They try to talk to anybody that accredits zoos? I don't know that. And so it's just knowing, you know, that's the thing. Anything in life on the internet or Netflix or whatever, you have to kind of do a little digging yourself. But was it entertaining? Yes.
It was
very entertaining. And do I just feel better about myself after watching it? Yeah, I do.
I just want to say, like, when I watched this thing, I saw the human side. I tried to just focus on the animal side because I knew we were doing this podcast. So I was thinking of the tigers the whole time, or the lions, or the primates they had, the elephant the guy was riding.
Oh.
I mean, I was looking at that from that perspective in a lens, from an animal welfare, animal conservation lens. But yeah, you got sucked in. I mean, it was so good. You're like, okay, next episode, because you want to see how it ends. But
yeah, the drama was real. It's just shocking to say the least.
And I'll tell you what, because I do work a lot in TV, I am shocked, beyond shocked, that Joe Exotic, that his show concept was not picked up by Animal Planet, because Animal Planet went through a really weird phase where they had like the mm-hmm. Turtle Man with no teeth. Like, and I know Joe's, I think, what is it? His producer, basically, they lost all the footage in that fire, but shocked that no one picked him up, because I mean, it was so compelling. I mean, as bad as it was like, oh man, this has reality TV star written all over it.
Yeah, it's like you know, bad accents. You cover your eyes, but you kind of have to look around the corner to see what's going on. It's human. It's human nature. It's our own human instinct, our own animal nature, right?
Absolutely. Okay, Chris, can we talk a little bit about tigers in the wild?
Yeah. Because I think, you know, I mean, that's obviously what we focus a lot on. And so when we did cover tigers, you know, early last year, I think it was, you know, the question is, a lot of what Joe said and the other characters they had on this show, especially one specific in the Carolinas, is they're helping tiger conservation. And I don't think they are in most aspects, and we'll get to that. But you know, when you look at the question, are there more tigers in the U.S. than there are in the wild? And yes, I think there are. We don't have hard numbers. I mean, I've got some hard numbers here, but tigers are disappearing from the wild. And a couple things, you know, there's truths in this documentary when they talk about what wild is left in Asia. And that's a major reason why a lot of tigers are going extinct. Subspecies. It's not just the species as whole, but you have six subspecies and they're all in trouble. So if we look at the healthiest populations, the Bengal tiger, you know, in India, and there's only 2,500 of them left in the wild, if that. So they're endangered. Then you go to the Sumatran tiger, that's the next healthiest population, and there's only 1,000 left. And this is where palm oil, you know, a lot of this exploitation of Sumatra and that part of the world. And I think that's where Sonarto was doing a lot of his research. You know, how many days does he spend out there with his camera traps?
So when they set camera traps to try to get accurate counts and locations of Sumatran tigers, him and his crew will usually hike in for 7 to 14 days just to get into the jungle, just to get to one trap.
Wow.
And then they have to hike out. So
yeah,
it's not for the faint-hearted, for sure. But the information that this is through World Wildlife Fund, the information that they're gathering is very critical to understand where the cats are and how many there are and what their behavior is. So that's what the team does. That's what the tiger expert team does in Sumatra. It's incredible. It's breathtaking, and they're conservation heroes for sure.
Yeah. And they're critically endangered. There's only 1,000 of them left, and they're decreasing. Then you go to the Siberian tiger or Mur tiger. There's only 540 of them left. They're endangered because their population's stable, maybe growing a little bit. Indochinese tiger, 250 left. Mm-hmm. So that's Southeast Asia. Malayan tiger, 120 left max. They're critically endangered. And then the South China tiger is probably extinct. Hasn't been sighted in 25 years. So when you talk tigers in the wild, it's bad. It's extremely bad. But tigers in Oklahoma have nothing to do with tigers in Asia. Because the bottom line is, any of these animals being raised in the pet trade, and that's what this is, these rescues are pets, will never, ever, ever be released in the wild. They probably will never survive in the wild. They have nothing to do with the physical tigers in the wild.
Right. Because, their genetics are garbage because they've been so inbred, and there's no data on it.
White tigers are that's a whole different topic in itself.
That is a different pot for a different day, but that, yes, white tigers, just briefly, are not like a variant of a coat color, like, for instance, how a horse might be brown or another one might be white. No, white tigers basically are the result of crazy inbreeding of a brother. Was it a brother and a sister?
They go back to one.
Just go back to one.
One male.
And so it was a coat mutation. And so, yes, all of the white tigers that are around or not all of them, but a lot of them have severe health issues. They're cross-eyed. One of the white tigers they showed on Tiger King, it was I was looking at its nose the whole time.
Yeah.
And so they have a lot of other malformations and abnormalities due to being so inbred. And so white tigers they're not a thing. Or guess what they are is bad news for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think a lot of people realize how in trouble tigers are. And I wonder if that is because we have so many roadside zoos like the one in Oklahoma, or every zoo, it seems like, you know, we do have tigers and people do keep them as pets. I'm sure that has to be a reason why some people think that they're doing fine in the wild.
Maybe. Yeah. And I mean, so when I looked at, you know, not just Joe Exotic does, but the other stuff. And Angie's got some great, great points about the big cat rescue in Florida. You know, you look at it from a conservation standpoint, there's no value there as far as the animals are concerned. None whatsoever. They are not conserving the species. They're conserving the species for the pet trade, sure, or for their own private enjoyment, sure. But they are not contributing to the conservation of wild tigers at all. The only value that I think they could argue is education and bringing to light that to me is the only leg they can stand on. Hey, we've had so many visitors per year and we taught them about conservation of tigers in the wild, and that makes an impact. But in my opinion, zoos do it a million times better.
By zoos, you mean accredited
zoos, AZA in the United States, other European has one, Asia has one, Australian Zoo, Auckland Zoo, Leipzig Zoo, London Zoo, all of those accredited
but
zoos.
But this is so hard, really quick, I just want to say, because they're great accredited zoos, but there are also zoos who aren't accredited that are great. So, for instance, I have good friends at the Pittsburgh Zoo and PPG Aquarium, and because they still want to work free contact with their elephants, they're no longer accredited. But that is a fantastic facility. So there's so many, it's not a black or white. You know what I mean? So I just want to put that out there, because there are good facilities like that that aren't AZA. I know the majority of AZA, though, absolutely are definitely credible.
And Corbett, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not, you know, obviously I don't work for a zoo. I'm a big believer in what zoos do for conservation.
Yep.
But do they breed their tigers, or, and we're talking big cats in this podcast, and are they part of the SSP, which is a species survival program, you know, where their genetics are controlled, you make sure that these subspecies aren't getting mixed, and, you know, they're, like
they
you
put
said,
together the right, the most genetically diverse pairs to keep the lines not from being inbred, and it's this whole, each subspecies of tigers within the accredited zoo's species survival plan pretty much has their own matchmaker, their own geneticist. Like, I wish I wish I was a geneticist. I'd actually have a real job. And so I think that's the thing, is that it's just so much more rigid. And I will definitely see your point that not all zoos are the same. I think when you are a person in the public, and you definitely want to make sure that you are not supporting, let's say, a roadside zoo or a place that does cub breeding or something like that. I think one of the easiest things to look at is for it to be the AZA accredited, so the American Associations of Zoos and Aquariums. And it's like the golden seal. And we'll talk about how that comes a little bit more later. Or I know Chris has an awesome podcast interview coming up in a couple days. I'm a little bit biased, but
of course you are. And I want to, Chris, I do want to give you the thumbs up, because I actually I've had some people on from the Pittsburgh Zoo and PPG Aquarium, and one of their curators, Henry, was talking about how he was part of, they were working with the SSP regarding their tigers. So I can vouch for them, but I just wanted to throw that out there, because
no, I think it's definitely a valid point. Nothing is perfect. And I mean, there's flaws in the AZA. Like, they are working to improve, and there's always room for improvement, and there's always special cases. And I think that's where, at the end of the day, a lot of it's going to come to the listener to do a little bit of research, not much digging. It's not, especially since we all have our handy dandy iPhones or cell phones. It doesn't take much to get a little bit of a feel of whether this is a Joe Exotic type facility. And honestly, I mean, Chris and I will probably go back and forth about this a little bit later in the podcast, but I mean, there's a lot worse than Joe out there. Joe's place. There's maybe a lot worse.
Well, I've seen one, but yeah, maybe.
So I'm talking like really small roadside things like that. So
do you know on, I think it was I-10 in Louisiana. I don't know if it's still there.
Tony the Tiger.
Have you driven by the gas station?
No,
where it's just, there's a gas station in the middle. People in the United States that have been down there know what I'm talking about. You pull off, and I think that, I don't know if they're still there or not. It's been many years, but there was two tigers in like two little cages right next to the freeway at a gas station. Louisiana?
Was this Tony the Tiger?
Because
I think it was like big, you know, free Tony the Tiger. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be that. Yeah.
I think the biggest.
There
point
are
is,
some bad places.
Not all zoos are created equal, for sure. Not all sanctuaries are, and so it's really fascinating. And I'm a scientist, so I'm super curious. And I don't know how you guys felt watching the documentary, but I kept saying like, how is this legal? How is this allowed? Because, I mean, we got to learn some of the characters, we saw that there's probably some shady, illegal things going on. But as far as the facility itself, owning those tigers, being a zoo, all of that, there's nothing illegal about it. Totally fine. So, I mean, Joe is a character and a half and had way too many big cats and way too many cats per cage or exhibit.
Exactly.
I'll give you all that, but technically that's allowed in Oklahoma, right? Well, so I feel like it's a lot bigger picture than just Joe. Like, in my opinion, I'm not sticking up for by any stretch or imagination, but that's allowed.
Yeah.
It's legal.
Well,
it's totally legal.
You know,
so the problem, I think, is more at the state and or federal level.
It's federal. I've got all the laws, and we can bore listeners with
in a second about it. Might be a different date.
I can summarize it, but
you know what I mean. It wasn't.
Well,
like,
I think,
how is that allowed? That's my biggest question.
Well, because there's no laws in Oklahoma with no bans on big cats. So the four states or five states in the United States: Nevada, Oklahoma,
Alabama, North Carolina, and Wisconsin have no laws banning importing or anything with tigers. You can own big cats in those five states with no laws. Then there's a bunch of six states ban or regulate keeping big cats. 21 states ban all dangerous exotic pets. They'll allow some with certain permits, and 35 states ban keeping big cats as pets with some exemptions like zoos or something like that.
Can I just say, and I mentioned this in my IGTV, but when I was 13 years old, I was looking at a reptile classified. I love looking at it. It's called kingsnake.com. For all of my reptile friends, you'll know it. You go to the classifieds, and I remember clicking on other exotics. I remember seeing tigers for sale, and they were $500.
Yeah, because there's so many. There's so many.
Accessible. And I just was like, it blew my mind, because I think some people just are just I think some people are just shocked at how accessible it is. I mean, to buy these cats.
I was blown away. You know, they're saying you can get a tiger for $2,000. You said $500. That just tells me that there are so many tigers out there. And there's definitely more. And I could jump into this because we got the data when we did our podcast on it. And the theory was there's more tigers in Texas than there was in the wild. And that came from the Humane Society of the United States, or the Humane Society itself. And there, when they did the survey, it only came back with 2,400 tigers in the U.S., but most people were hiding how many tigers they had, you know, or didn't admit to having tigers. So, but then they go, you know, then they looked at the data from a standpoint of people injured, like this woman gets her arm ripped off in the show. Like, like this is why roadside zoos are horrendous. You know, no protection. I mean, that can, knock on wood, that can happen in an accredited zoo, but these workers were never trained. He was picking up homeless people, paying them $100 a week.
I want to say it painted a really bad picture of zoos across America, and also painted a bad picture for keepers, because to be a keeper at an accredited zoo, you have to usually be, you have to have some sort of a degree. You have to have 2 to 3 years of experience, if not more. It is a coveted position. So to have people who have, you know, problems with drugs or, you know, and I'm all about having second chances, but if you're a felon, you know what I mean? Like working with these animals with zero experience, it really painted this awful picture of some of keepers.
I mean, Corbin, you're so spot on. When I entered the zoo as a zookeeper in an accredited facility, this was some years ago, and I think I was – this is for a part-time position at with my degree. I had a degree, and this was for a part-time position and at minimum wage, and there were 100 candidates. I got the job.
It's because of your sparkly personality.
It's only because they had horse skills. They were looking for somebody that could like tame their wild ponies they had. But at any rate, it's my foot in the door. And it's only gotten, in a certain instance, it's only gotten harder to get in, because they really want the best qualified candidate, because it is, it's not just about picking up poop anymore. I mean, of course, that's part of the job, but I mean, it's all about enrichment and training and doing scientific research and interacting with the public and education. And just, it's really evolved into this. I mean, it's an amazing career opportunity. And yes, though the depiction of zookeepers on this show and or volunteers or whatever was just, it was heartbreaking. And I almost couldn't get past the first episode because of that reason, to take a stand or whatever, because it's just not, that's not how it is. And that's,
it's very hard.
I say this documentary was made for the drama. Once again, if you went and interviewed all the keepers I worked with at my accredited facility, no offense, most of them would be too boring be on the show, right? Including myself included. So, but yeah, and of course, a lot of my zookeeper friends are just, it's blown up, and I think it's annoying a lot of people and frustrating them. And I guess one of the reasons I wanted to be here today too is also to hopefully, towards the end of the podcast, talk about what we can do with some, if we were, whatever emotion, if the emotion that the Tiger King drawed up in you was negative or anything like that. I think there's some stuff we can do with that because that could help out big cats in the wild, and then those also under human care and accredited facilities, be it whether it's a zoo or a sanctuary.
Awesome. And Chris, what were you going to say regarding the zoos?
No, just how hard it was. I mean, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, name drop, but Rick Schwartz, who's now the spokesperson.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I loved. I almost listened to that episode. I think I listened to it twice, that interview with Rick Schwartz. And I've had him on my show, but I loved it. Go ahead. I loved that one, Zookeeper Rick.
Thanks.
It was amazing.
He's amazing, and now he's the spokesperson. It was so hard. He didn't get hired by San Diego till the seventh try, and then it was part-time. So they only want the best of the best. And we get asked all the time, how do you become a zookeeper? Or, you know, and a lot of our friends are zookeepers and met them through the podcast.
And you have an interview coming up all about that soon.
Yes. Yes. Well, okay. So Thursday with Angie's husband, John, who's the director of a zoo, we talk a lot about getting accredited, how difficult it is. We talk about the zookeeping field, what zoos do for animals in the wild. So I think, you know, I definitely want to talk about the welfare of these animals on the show and what's wrong with it. But when you see what happens at Joe Exotic's place, what that place in Carolina does, which I want to throw up, and then even the rescue down in Florida, she's not breeding them anymore. I applaud her for that. I applaud how she's changed the direction she's gone. But even then, those cats were not kept in the best conditions.
Yeah, thank you. I don't think Carol, oh my God, I'm probably getting so much flack for this, but I don't know. There's something fishy about this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you guys can't tell me you watched that and thought,
No.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so here's one of the big points with all of that is that an accredited zoo and an accredited sanctuary, they should have a board of directors, some chain of command, something, checks and balances, okay, which was obviously lacking at both Big Cat and obviously at Joe's, like big time, right? He was the king. What he said did, whether it was illegal or not or whatever. Yeah. And that is a huge, huge problem from a safety aspect of the animals, from human resources of the employees or the volunteers and things like that. And so I don't know much about the facility in Florida. I've never been there. And who knows, too, with the documentary, were they just showing only the bad parts or what? I think the thing about it is, once again, though, whether you like the cages or you didn't like the cages as far as their size, all of that, folks, don't hate on Joe. Don't hate on Carol. Hate on your government, because that is totally
that's
USDA.
A good point. Yeah.
That is USDA and Fish and Wildlife, fine. Like, they're okay with that. I mean, I think if you look up the Florida law for an exotic animal, because Florida's one of those, there's partial bans, and you have to allegedly have to get permits, but you can maybe, like, buy them for super cheap. And it's pretty sketchy down here in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody who's been to Florida can now relate. Just Google Florida man and then your birthday, and some funny stuff always will make you laugh. So Florida's we've got some loopholes and things in it, but I think it's the cat has to have the exotic animal, depending on their size, let's say a big cat, I think it has to have like 6 feet. Basically has to be able to turn around.
Okay, and I have to say something.
And that's the law. So for me, I actually, at both facilities, I saw a lot more room than that.
Yeah.
Now, I think the cages were, like, not great. And definitely at Joe's, I had a huge problem with how many cats. Because tigers, for those of you that haven't listened to our other tiger podcasts, is that tigers are solitary creatures in the wild. So they only come together for breeding. So it is actually not natural for them to be living with, I don't know, I think I counted like 15 head, 20 head of tiger in some of Joe's pens. That's not how, they're not like lions. Lions live in families, the Lion King, the pride, all of that. It's different for tigers.
Yeah.
And so I took a lot of issue with how they were housed at Joe's a lot more than how they were housed at Carol's.
I do want to say that I heard from both sides. I heard from people who wanted to be completely anonymous that they were either for the big cat rescue or against it. Some people messaged me and said they're both crazy, that Joe and Carol are both crazy. I did receive a message from someone who currently works at the Big Cat Rescue with Carol, who knows her personally. And this is the first time, actually the first time I've read it in its entirety. It was one of my blocked messages on Instagram because I didn't follow this person. But I'm just going to read what she has to say, okay? Mm-hmm. Just basically defending. So it says, so I actually work with the cats at Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, and I know Carol and the facility well. I think that many things got misconstrued in the documentary. Obviously, Joe is a bad guy, and there's absolutely no denying that. But Carol is the sweetest and most genuine person I've ever met in my life. She admits to her faults in her younger years of owning big cats as pets, realized it was a bad idea, started to educate the public on the plight of cats, built a GFAS-accredited facility, and now wants the abuse of big cats to stop, primarily the cub petting. That's the Big Cat Public Safety Act bill we will promote. It will primarily stop people from owning big cats as pets and stop cub petting. If people have the cats, they won't be taken away. It would just be nice if people registered their cats. 10,000 to 20,000 big cats in the U.S. is an absurdly large gap. Zoos, as long as they are accredited, won't be affected, and neither will the LSU mascot. But I urge you to look up Tony the Tiger Truck Stop, Tony the Tiger at the Truck Stop. That's one thing that will be directly affected by this bill and Carol's mission. It's heartbreaking. I know that was a little long, but that is someone who is, you know,
well, it's good insight, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. So I just wanted to say that I've heard from good sides and bad sides. So,
yeah, no, I think that there is, once again, there's a couple sides to every story.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I want to applaud Carol because she did have a change where she was breeding big cats, and I don't want to say her facility is bad. I mean, it's so expensive to maintain them, but I think yesterday Angie and I were talking about this, and Angie made a good point, and it really shows me, you know, put your money where your mouth is. They spent millions of dollars in legal fees to fight a copyright claim against Joe Exotic. Where, do you know what Sinarto can do with that in Indonesia if he had that money? What he could do for tigers down there. So
how many traps he could, yeah. Not traps. Make sure and be clear. How many, not tiger dogs, how many camera traps,
right.
And helpers to protect the wild tigers.
Yes. So, just dying, yes, over here. Yeah. Not yeah, tiger traps. Yeah. That is disgusting how much money went for legal fees. I mean, that is really, right, come on.
And so whether or not her facility is obviously, it's accredited, and we just found out, and it is, completely okay by Fish and Wildlife and USDA. And, so, you know, whether or not we like it, that was a lot of money to spend, on
legal
pretty
fees.
Much. I mean, and I understand her passion. I get that, she, you know, he was the enemy and he represents cub petting and cub or tiger breeding and all that. And, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's the right use of money, but it was, it's just an outlandish amount of money on both parts.
They could have put in a multi-million-dollar exhibit for one of the cats. Mm-hmm. With the amount,
exactly,
they
or
spent
put that
on legal
money, or
fees.
Or put that money overseas.
Oh,
to,
yeah, tiger conservation, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so that's, I think that's a thing too that's, for me, what makes me really passionate about, like, the AZA accredited zoos is the amount of money they put into conservation in the wild. I think, let's see, last year, was it? It
Two,
was like,
239, oh, right?
Million.
Million.
Spent on... Million, 231 million, yep, conservation projects, money towards conservation projects abroad every year. Not, and so I think that's really underappreciated when you go to your local accredited zoo, or that's a really big difference between obviously Joe Exotica's or Exotica. That's not even his name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Joe Exotic, whatever his
sounds
name
like
is.
Sounds like a porn
between,
name.
I know. I mean, did you watch the show?
I had to go ahead, Chris. What'd you say?
I wanted to throw it there too.
I mean, yeah, seriously.
Listen to Angie talk with AZA zoos, it's not just that they pour that money in. They send their keepers overseas to do conservation projects. So my buddy Mike at the LA Zoo went to Africa and worked with giraffes. I know the San Diego Zoo, their koala team, when I interviewed them, they were sent over to Australia to help with conservation.
My accredited zoo sent
I know a zookeeper, yeah, Angie.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the, I guess that's the thing. And so that's where I talk a little bit more. I think when we're looking at organizations, whether they're zoos or aquariums for that matter, or sanctuaries, is where are the checks and balances? Like who's regulating the mission, and what is the mission? What does it look like? Are they breeding? Are they not breeding? It's a totally different podcast for a different day, but, Joe had the hybrid tigers or ligers.
Oh, no. That's this podcast. No. I'm all ready for that one.
Hit it. Attack me. No pun intended.
That's a huge problem.
So I had ligers. Let's talk
yeah,
about
Yeah, okay.
It.
Oh, hit me. This one.
Hit
this
me.
One. Oh, my God. This one. Okay. So this place that breeds them, and they you see them on social media, and they get millions of likes, and it drives me crazy.
Bonkers.
And it shows one of them swimming with tigers, like how wonderful this is. And, you know, this attractive female in a bikini, and she's under the waterfall. I want to throw up. It makes me so angry. You should not be bathing with tigers, for one thing. Then they show the liger, and they have tried to defend the liger, saying it's natural. It happens in the wild. It's such BS. Ligers are unnatural. Hybrid of lions and tigers. So you breed a male lion to a female tiger and you get ligers. Okay. If you bred a male tiger to a lioness, it's a tigon. And I don't even know how many of those are out there. So the ligers, they're huge, right? You get this hybrid vigor, this unnatural, this massive animal with a short life. Physically, they're a mess. Because they're so big, their frames can't support them, so they get arthritis. You watch some of these videos of these ligers; they have trouble walking them. And in the video, in the movie, they show them moving the liger in a cage, you know, pulling it with a four wheeler, because that liger can't walk great distances.
So I have to butt in because I've had someone on my podcast, Jay from Prehistoric Pets, who I. Mm-hmm. He was defending ligers, and on my show, he was telling, and I'm not trying to put I'm not trying to put a spotlight on him, but he was saying that naturally, because there are lions in Asia, well, there used to be, there's only like, 60 or 100 mm-hmm. left, the Asiatic lions, that they were, he said, thousands of years ago, they would breed. So what is your claim for that?
It's so rare. That would be so rare. And most natural scientists would say that's a bunch of baloney,
okay.
That it would be a rare occurrence. Like we saw a few years ago, a polar bear, a grizzly bear mix, right?
Oh,
like,
wow. Yeah.
That a hunter killed, and it was a hybrid. Oh,
lovely.
That it happens. It happens, but it's so rare. It's so rare. And because here's one, Jason from Wild Animal Safari in Pine Mountain, Georgia. This is an article many years ago talking about ligers. And he said out of the 24 that they bred for, only 3 were normal. But even as they grew older, they still developed neurological disorders. He's like, these things are not natural. They don't survive they would never survive in the wild, or it would be very rare if they did. And ligers are horrific, horrific. And anybody that breeds and shows off ligers should be shamed. I'm sorry. And on social media, you should not be supporting people like this. I'm sorry. It just – that is where the animal welfare comes in, and that's where it kicks in, where this is not natural. You know, it is not okay.
In Jay's defense, and I'm just trying to play devil's advocate because I had Jay on, and Jay has – I'm not trying to put Jay on the spot. I feel like I am.
No.
But
sorry,
Jay. Yeah, no, Jay's a super nice guy, and he owns the Reptile Zoo in California. He has one of the biggest social media followings of anyone I know. He has over 1.5 million followers. His defense is because he has received a lot of hate. And by the way, I feel like you guys should listen to the podcast interview I had with Jay.
I will.
just to kind of hear his thoughts. But his thing is, you know, he does get backlash for when he does stuff with tigers, this and that. But he's talking about how, hey, listen, I'm bringing awareness, you know, of these animals, about these animals, how they are disappearing. And in Jay's defense, he does do these IGTVs, and he is saying, like, hey, we need to help these animals. So, I mean, I,
but you know, he doesn't breed ligers.
No.
Oh, then there.
No,
okay, so
he
then,
just. But yeah. I don't think he. He may have a video with a liger, or it is some tiger, and I think it is at one of these facilities. So his argument, because he has received backlash, is, hey, I'm bringing these animals into people's homes, on their phones. A lot of these people would never see them. You know, they are endangered in the wild. He is educating people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and well, I see that point, and that's definitely a point I know that I think Joe brought up in somewhere in one of the episodes, mm-hmm. where he believes him keeping wildlife is a key connection for many people to want to connect with animals and want to know more about them. So you could potentially extrapolate that into like saving them. Don't necessarily think that a liger helps bring about that feeling of wanting to help with conservation or learn mm-hmm. more about animals. Any more than a serval, probably any more than a raccoon.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have more stuff to say about the liger? You hit me with it. I feel like he wants to jump through the screen.
I know. It's because there's so much misinformation out there. And that's where, like, you know, Angie and I, we're scientists, we're science-based.
Yeah.
Our opinions.
Yeah, that's the thing is you don't need ligers there's no data out there to show that you need a big cat to get people excited about animals in general.
No, and
I worked at a zoo forever, and people liked the squirrels on the public path more than they did some of the other animals. Or I would hold a little bunny and they could pet a bunny or a chicken. That got more kids engaged than, I mean, it would blow your mind. Well, you know, Corbin, you bring animals out like that. You don't have a big cat, and you can still woo audiences and get your education, get them excited and get your education message across. So I don't think it has to be a big cat. I think you and potentially are doing a disservice to think that.
Right. And I think I'm just trying to say, like, Angie and I, we have our opinions and we share our opinions, but we don't let it leak into the podcast that often unless they're very strongly backed up with evidence. Like, we're evidence-based scientists, and to say ligers were everywhere is a total disservice, and is a disservice to the Asiatic lion, and it's a disservice to the Bengal tiger in that region of the world. So that, you know, disinformation is something Angie and I, it just frustrates me. Carol's person that wrote you, I don't think there's 20,000 tigers in the United States. Prove it. I don't. From the studies I saw, they estimate maybe 5,000. There could be up to 10 that are very well hidden, but from the surveys I saw, maybe 5,000 in the United States, which is still too many. It's 5,000 too many in my opinion. Just, you know, accredited zoos or some of these zoos that are involved with the SSPs, I think, should have them. I think the biggest, you know, I want to give people solutions, and maybe we can save that for the end, and that's supporting some of the legislation that Carol's pushing.
Yeah, I'm going to get – oh, my God. Okay, well, I'm just going to say – okay, so I know you don't like Doc, right? Is this the guy – what is his name? Doc?
I'm just very careful. I don't want a lawyer coming knocking on my door.
No joke. I'm going to have to edit the crap. Hold on. Okay, so there is Myrtle Beach Safari. They focus on that in the documentary. As a viewer, I've never been to Myrtle Beach Safari. Some of those enclosures looked beautiful compared to something – I mean, underwater viewing, waterfalls, green, luscious grass – I mean,
yes, but I had.
How do they afford that? How do they afford that?
Yeah,
cub petting. Is that what you're getting at? The cub petting.
Yes. Well, and from a welfare point of view, one thing I want to point out is that bull, in my opinion, and once again, I'm not a veterinarian or a tiger physiologist or expert, but I never saw like an emaciated cat, or they all had plenty of food.
Yeah.
In fact, at the South Carolina one, I wanted to, they were actually probably some of them on the morbidly obese scale. And I don't know what that is for a cat. big cat like that. But I'm sure some veterinarians out there that service domestic cats on a daily basis were like, jaws were probably dropping to the floor. And that is a disservice too from an animal health perspective. I mean, that is not.
No.
And I was wondering, I'm like, oh, is he trying to make them so overweight so they'll like they're slow they're. To slow them down. I don't know. And it's horrible for arthritis. So now if you have inbred ligers or cat or whatever now that are prone to arthritis and then you put that kind of weight on them, I don't know. I mean, so that was for me that it would, the animal condition was over condition. We call it in the industry at that facility. And then at Joe's,
Joe seemed okay. I mean,
he seemed okay.
There was a couple emaciated ones that we saw in the video, but
I didn't pick up on that too much. They looked overall, in my opinion, okay. But once again, these are just little glimpses. We're not, you know, we're not there day in and day out. I think you brought up a good point. How do they pay for that luxurious looking waterfall and landscape?
Like you said in the beginning, this is all gray. There's not black and white. There's no yes or no. Some places I've seen so-called rescues, which are personal zoos. Tigers kept in beautiful conditions, many acres, beautiful parks. So there's good rescues out there, you know. And then you see something like what I saw with Joe Exotic when he had a dozen tigers in one cage area with nowhere to shelter, no straw to lay on. It's muddy. It's a mud bath. They're all fighting over food. Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the potential issues is that there is no specific definition for zoo or rescue or sanctuary. There just isn't. You can't just assume, like Chris said, it's not black and white. Not all zoos are the same. Not all sanctuaries are the same. And not all rescues are the same. And that makes it really hard for the public. And I also think that who doesn't want to quote unquote get their picture taken with a cub? I mean, if you're going to stay in here right now and tell me you don't want to pet a cub either, then I'm going to tell you there's something wrong with you.
I'm raising my hand.
You don't want to because you know better.
But
in a pretend world, if it was okay, I mean, who wouldn't snuggle up against that thing?
This is the first time I've ever talked about this publicly, but we used to have a roadside zoo. It was off our freeway, and I volunteered there when I was 13. And I have a picture with playing with tiger cubs. That place has since shut down, thank God, because it turned into an awful situation. This guy had white tigers. Everything was, I mean, I was inside cleaning. You guys, this is a true story. I can't believe I'm talking about this. My second day of volunteering, I was inside cleaning by myself, me and my friend. We were 13 years old, no supervision, cleaning inside a tiger exhibit with the tigers in the den. 100%. That same day, I'm not making this up. The tiger got out as we opened the den. The tiger was out. The owner had to come out and get a hose to try to get it back in the den. That was my second day of volunteering. Wow. So it.
That's insane, Corbin. I'm almost about to cry.
So, I remember watching that den door, and I remember being, I've never been more scared in my life, just thinking like, wow, if that den door opened, I would be gone. But anyway, that was my second day of volunteering. I was inside picking up tiger scat. Now listen, the experience was amazing. And I have a picture of me with these tiger cubs that were wrestling me, but where are those tigers now? Probably dead. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are they? I mean, the zoo turned out 90% of the animals ended up dying. They found a rotting snow leopard in one of the enclosures. The giraffe snapped its neck in half. I mean, anyway, it was horrific, and this was 18 years ago. So I've seen it firsthand, and I've played with cubs, and that experience is amazing. Who would not want to do it?
Right. I mean, and it's just – and so it's – of course, since then you've learned more.
I've learned more.
We know more, right? We have a more sophisticated opinion about these types of things. And I think that's the thing is a lot of people that aren't in the animal industry or aren't as familiar with wildlife or zoos – I can understand totally why it seems like an okay thing to do. I had a friend that wanted to pet some tigers at a fair or something. Yeah. And she's like, well, they said the money was going to conservation. And she's a brilliant woman. Like, she's a smart person. Yep. And so she checked with me afterwards and she's like, I want to see your thoughts on that. And so she didn't do it, but I can see how it's very easy to then, and then of course everybody wants to share the selfies and things like that. But what people don't realize, or are what we want to talk about today, is those cubs that are used for promotional exploitation or whatever it is, they're only able to do that from the time they're born. They're pulled from their moms, right? So they're literally with their mom for like, right, maybe for a day, maybe not, depends on what the breeder does. And then they're pulled and then they're bottle fed, and they're actually really only able to interact or be petted or pictures taken or whatever with the public from the time they're like 8 to 12 weeks old.
I think the worst footage in that documentary for me is when the tiger is giving birth and he uses that long stick through the fence, and he tries to get that baby tiger out as fast as he could with the cub, and he's trying to peel it underneath the fence and the head's getting caught. And
it's so horrible. It made me want to cry, because
it is. And I just want to say something, because I did, you know, touch cubs in a past life. I've learned, and I'm happy that you have, you know, you brought that up, you know, at a roadside zoo and stuff like that. But there are instances in accredited facilities where you can work with cubs if you are a professional. But I don't know. There's just so many black and there's so.
Yeah.
So much,
I mean, and the public should be known too, that the, a tiger will typically stay with its mom in the wild for up to 2 years. Mm-hmm. So and then they bottle feed it, and they've actually bottle feed them longer than they probably should. And by they, this is me, just a very general blanket. So not all breeders, I'm sure, are equal, but in general, that they don't get the nutrients they need. And so they're on this bottle formula, whatever it is, for longer than they probably would be. And so a lot of times, too, that can have long-term side effects for their health from not having the proper nutrition when they were young. Mm-hmm. And then in the story, they're 12 weeks old. They're done. They're out. They can no longer – they're too big, too wild. They cannot be handled by, quote-unquote, the public. So what happens then?
Oh, this is – the one quote I wrote down, because like you said, I took tons of notes while I was watching all 7 episodes. And this was attributed to the place in Carolina that Joe said. And he's basically saying when they're young and when they're cubs, they're moneymakers. And he admitted he made up to $30,000 at a mall.
Wow.
With cubs.
And just one weekend?
Yeah, one mall. Yeah, one mall.
Wow.
Yeah, up to $30,000. And then they say when they're old, they're nothing but a bill. And so Joe at one point said he had
a liability.
Joe said he had over 220 tigers with 20 more coming. And this is towards the end when he's like running for governor or whatever, trying to raise money.
So insane. I know. He's so insane.
But now it's on record. He's convicted of killing 5 tigers because they would go when they run out of use. You know, they go and euthanize a lot of them or kill them or shoot them. And I don't know if you caught it in there, but one of the workers at the one facility that remains unnamed, she alleged she fell in love with this tiger, and then the tiger just totally disappeared. Totally disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't know whatever happened
to her. Saying that facility is killing them, euthanizing them, and then cremating them on the premises. Yes.
Yeah, alleged. So my whole thing is, what makes a good rescue? If they're not breeding – and they are, because we need rescues. I mean, bottom line, we need Carolina Tiger Rescue should be the gold standard. We need places like that, because people get these when they're cute, cuddly, or young, and then they get too old and they're too expensive, up to $10,000 a year to care for one tiger.
Right. And
we need facilities to take these animals in. But if they're breeding.
And Carolina Tiger Rescue is a good example, because they don't buy any animals. They don't sell any animal parts. They don't breed. They don't allow public contact with the animals. Their staff doesn't touch the animals unless it's for like an animal procedure with a sedation or something like that. They don't exhibit animals off site. So I think that there's a big, big difference in how these places are designed. And the Carolina Tiger Rescue will also not take cubs for this reason. So, because they're like, we don't want to be part of the problem. Like, if we'll just take the cubs at how, you know, at 3 months or 4 months when they're no longer able to be used for petting and picture taking, then we're just part of the problem. And so what ends up happening is the really good rescues or sanctuaries will also not take young animals because they don't want to be part of the problem. They want to be part of the solution. So that leaves the breeder or the private owner in a little bit of a pickle of what are they going to do with this animal? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not going to – I have my own theories on what they're doing. And
they're killing them?
I mean, a tiger is worth about $50,000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. For body parts and all that.
Oh,
nonsense.
My God. Yeah. Oh, sorry, you bro. Think that there could be a correlate? Oh.
I have no idea. But
I know. It's just a theory.
I just know that if – I mean, it, well – there's probably, yeah, there might be other non-accredited rescues that maybe are taking them. I don't know, but I have to wonder where all these three-month-old tigers.
I've never even thought of that.
I never thought of that either, Angie.
I don't know. It's a hypothesis. I have no proof.
No,
but I also, with that being said, I also wonder, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, at the end of the day, I don't think we cannot like Joe. And we cannot like Carol or any of the other players of this wacky Tiger King show. But at the end of the day, it is the local and state and federal government that you should not be liking. And I'm not a libertarian or anything like that or whatever. I'm just saying like that it's the law's fault. Like this cub petting, most of this stuff is totally legal.
Yeah, and I just want to say something, though. I feel, and I want to get your opinion on this, do you think that Joe, when he started out, really loved his animals?
Yes.
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 I do. And too. The same for Carol.
Yeah.
I think here's the deal. Here's the deal with owning private ownership of big cats. I'm sure most people that start it are doing it with really good intentions. They really love the animal. They interact with it. I mean, they're beautiful. They're majestic. It's I understand that. I liked working with exotic animals as well. But I think somewhere along the line, because of laws allowing for this to happen, things can spiral out of control. Because a key fact we probably should have made, and we kind of made so far on this podcast, but animal care or animal welfare for exotics, so let's totally exclude domestics. The care of animals under in captivity or under human care is poorly regulated. Like, poorly regulated, whether it's a turtle or a chimpanzee. And some states are trying to change that, but in general, it's more up to the individual or the institution.
See, so I had a friend who wants to be anonymous, and basically mm-hmm. her statement was saying, or his statement, it could be a guy or girl. Mystery told me that they worked at a big cat rescue. They were very aware of Carol. They did not work at Carol's cat rescue, but their claim was, listen, Carol wants to be the only big cat rescue, and she wants all the others shut down. And she said if they pass this act, it's going to affect even things like outreach programs, even using smaller cats, for instance, servals or ocelots for educational programs. I mean, I do television segments, you know, on the Today Show. I work with cats. You know, we feature cheetahs from accredited places. We're currently working on bringing on an ocelot, which is obviously I just broke that news. Anyway, but
here... Here first,
but that's with an accredited facility. They have the licenses. So Mystery comment told me that if this law passes, then it's going to affect all of us, and it's not just going to, you know, and so go ahead, Chris.
Okay. this person who I read the act. Okay. So I read it. And
yeah,
so
Chris, quick, give us a quick breakdown for listeners that aren't familiar with the Big Cat right. Safety Act.
And I think if you want to make a change, if you're fired up, this you need to contact your legislators, because I think, you know, I don't know what Carol's about. I didn't look up her stuff. You know, I don't think there should be 5,000 tigers in the United States. I think there should be a few hundred at zoos and then accredited zoos, and maybe some regulation where people can use them for education, right? I think it's the Wild West, or it was the Wild West, where a lot of these animals are being bred and abused and their welfare is not being monitored. That's just my opinion. Okay, there's one of my opinions. Big Cat Public Safety Act. So basically it says, in general, it's unlawful for any person to import, export, transport, sell, receive, acquire, or purchase in interstate or foreign commerce, or in a manner big legal words in Congress, affecting interstate or foreign commerce, or to breed or possess any prohibited wildlife species. Now, there are exceptions built in there for zoos and education. But it says lions, tigers, leopards, snow leopards, jaguars, cougars, or any hybrids. Those are the prohibited species, not ocelots, not you know, smaller cats.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see that in this. It didn't. So again, we got to just go with truth. This is what it says. We can't. That's where I'm like, the disinformation doesn't help, because people start turning off their ears. They just say, well, you know, that's a lie. And sometimes we make mistakes. I mean, we all make this. Could maybe I read it wrong, but I pulled it up. You know, what was submitted in Congress in 2019. So.
And for the record, at least the last estimate I heard, that it only has 3% chance of passing.
Oh, yeah, really?
It's not going to get passed. Okay. Well, this might change with Tiger.
Maybe.
Oh, my God,
I mean,
it might
change.
Hopefully. Oh, you're right.
But it goes on to say, you know, what's a sanctuary? They can do this, but things they can't do is sell or breed. Because I think, you know, with the cub petting.
I don't think that would affect Carol's, and I don't think it would affect North Carolina
Tiger Rescue. And the message that the anonymous Instagram person said, that it would not affect anyone who currently has them. They just want to stop the cub petting. You know,
yeah, which,
but someone could call.
We have to.
Yeah, it's like you got to start somewhere. I don't know.
I just want to say this, because I'm looking at all around, and the more and more, you know, our podcasts are listened to, the more and more stuff is out there, the more and more we're hearing from people who have all these opinions. And I own an educational outreach company that takes reptiles to do shows. Someone could argue and say, well, Corbin, what's the difference between someone touching a large African tortoise and a tiger? So let's talk about it, because it's like someone could call me a hypocrite. I'm serious. Yes. I'm sorry, guys. I'm dealing with a lot of trolls. Well, not a lot. I shouldn't say that. I have a lot of good comments, but there's people out there. So what would you say against that?
Well, first of all, Corbin, yeah. I just want to tell you a very wise woman named Marianne, bless her soul. She once told me that if nobody's talking about you, you're not doing a good enough job.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, so, but, so yeah, you can borrow that one from me anytime. It's an okay thing. So what was the question again?
Go ahead, Chris.
Where's the line? I gave a lot of thought to this, because I know what you do. I know you have an alligator.
Two.
You know, and but he's a rescue.
Two,
you know,
both
some,
are rescues.
Two, you have two now?
I've always had two. I'm not. Yes, I'm
breeding
currently
them?
Yes, I'm Corbin the Alligator King. No, I'm not breeding them. Let me tell you. So I have two alligators. I have special licenses from Idaho Fish and Game. One of my alligators was living in someone's bedroom. The other one was given as an anniversary present. So, and in my defense, and I actually filmed in IGTV my first one talking about Tiger King, and I had my alligator in the background, and I thought, you know what? Mm-hmm. I didn't put it out publicly, because I thought, this isn't good. I need to do, you know, with something like a ball python, something less controversial. But in my video, I stated, like, I am not out there advocating for people to have alligators as pets. I'm not getting any new alligators for our educational shows. Chompers is 6.5 feet. Sawney's 10.5 feet. He weighs like 300 pounds. They're literally retired. And if you follow my Instagram feed, you'll know we're building them a brand new 1,000 square foot facility that's just insane. It's like crazy. But so that would be my argument is like, you know, I'm not, you know what I mean?
And I had a lot of thought of it for you. And I was like, you know, what Corbin does, what you do is extremely important for wildlife, you know, and that's, you know, what I believe and what Angie and I have talked about for a couple of years since we've known you, you know, what you do. So where do you draw the line? I don't know.
I think you draw the line with like the mobility, the size, the class of the animal. I mean, maybe alligators is a different talk for a different day. I don't know. But I don't think that you like I don't think you can compare a tiger and a ball python.
No. Yeah, or a chimpanzee or an elephant.
Oh my God. I think they're all
his pet elephant. I mean, like who owns pet elephants?
No,
like,
his
come
pet
on.
Elephant looked all the like chimpanzees, it was in great care.
I mean, that's horrible.
No, his animals are fine. I will say that place, their animals, like Angie said earlier, they take immaculate care of the ones they keep. What happens to the ones that they don't keep? That's my question for them. And they say, oh, we give millions to conservation. I've heard that on Instagram. Show us. Show us who benefits from that money. Have you sent money to Sonarto, who's out in the jungle actually doing work? No. You know, all that money that they charge, which is it's very expensive to go there and mess with their tigers.
Okay.
Has built that facility, has built all their beautiful homes, pays for those beautiful things.
Bought those one girl's boobs, remember? She got her...
Yes. I mean...
Those admission tickets bought her you know, a brand
I
new...
Think they, I think you can write that off on your taxes, though.
Are you serious? Okay.
I have no idea, but... Okay. You know what I mean? The whole show is just bizarre. And I think that when you... Whatever place you're addressing, how about this? Rather, it's an independent wildlife educator like yourself and your company, or an accredited the San Diego Zoo, or Joe Exotica, or
Exotica.
I keep saying that's so funny. That's like how it was in my brain. Or whatever facility. I think it's up to like the proof is in the pudding of your mission statement on your website, on what rules and regulations you're following, and what you're doing and how you're not profiting off of it, or if you are.
For instance, if I was breeding my alligators and I was producing 60, 70, 80 baby alligators for hands-on shows for people to touch them and then selling them on the internet, that would probably put me on the lines of Joe Exotic 100%. And that would be wrong for me. So that I would say that's the difference. That'd be a huge difference.
Yeah, well, no.
One of many.
I mean, one of many. I know.
No.
Let me smile real big. Let me zoom in and see those.
No,
teeth.
He's got two. He's got two. No, well, I mean, Corbin, one of the things it's you can farm alligators. So that's legal. And that's and whether you agree with it or not, you know, people do, you know, wear alligator boots, things like that. There's a major difference between farming alligators and farming tigers.
Yeah.
Because what Joe Exotic did was farm tigers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
he had
227
tigers on his property. Mm-hmm. Like, what the what? I mean, that is out of control.
Okay.
And that is a huge problem.
This is going to get really touchy. This is a heated. I like this roundtable. This is a very interesting. This is very controversial. I think this is more controversial than any roundtable we've done. Do you think Carol killed her husband?
Oh God!
This is so.
Oh God, golly!
Through the lens of TV and them building a narrative, there's no evidence she did. There's no people disappear all the time.
Beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Yeah, I mean people disappear lawyer-y. All the time. I don't want to go there.
She's definitely an eccentric character. I don't want the drama or whatever.
That was the drama of the show, and you know who knows where he went. People disappeared, and people do crazy stuff. So what I will say in Carol's defense or whatever, again, is how she saw the light, isn't breeding them, and is bringing light to this problem. Because, you know, I'll keep it to animal things.
I know. Oh, so no. Okay, you guys, you have to admit though, the way they shot.
He spent $1 million plus on copyright stuff. You think I'm gonna say anything?
Oh, you're right. I'm gonna have to edit the crap out of this podcast. I'm so.
No, I mean it's in the public domain now. So, but I, you know, I watched her and I felt really bad how bad she was attacked by Joe Exotic because she was trying to put him out.
Now, hold on. Okay, guys, I don't know this. Has the Big Cat Rescue officially made a statement after this Tiger King documentary?
I don't know. I think on their website, there was a rebuttal or some basically saying there was a lot of things misconstrued. Which, if you watch any documentary based on people's lives and things like that, even certain like different news stories or things like that, it's usually you have to know they're painting a picture or telling a certain story. So for all parties involved, I'm sure there were plenty of clips they maybe wished were played, and they selected.
For instance, as reported by TMZ, I actually was going to talk about this last night on my new live show on Facebook, but Joe's ex-husband actually got new teeth back in July. And he, swear to God, he was very mad, he told TMZ, because they shot a bunch of interviews with his new set of chompers, and they decided to use none of that footage, and the producers told him to film it.
Exactly.
The producer said, hey, you should film with your shirt off. So, in his defense, he got a new set of chompers. He looks pretty good. So I just like.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, so it's hard So it's hard to make any real judgment on what one person, how much of their truth was really shown. Mm-hmm. I mean, they put a lot out there, but I'm sure there were other parts that were edited as well, edited out of different things. And so I think as far as Joe's side of the story or Carol's side of the story goes, we will have to leave it up to the legality of it all. And so far, only one of them is in prison, and it's not Carol.
No.
So, no. You know, I
don't know.
I guess.
Hashtag Carol killed her husband was on my Instagram and a few comments. So,
So all this actually brings up a really fascinating point that I just want to make sure that we all think about with this is, I'm not going to lie, the show was entertaining, and I definitely binge watched it. During this time when we all need distractions,
yes.
I saw a funny meme that said, like, let's actually thank Joe and Carol for giving us this
Seriously.
Distraction during a really important time of need, right? We all need a little bit of a weird, odd distraction. And the Tiger King for 2020 will
You're
always
right.
be remembered as this odd distraction during where we all have all these odd feelings that most of us have never felt before. Some of it's grief, loss, anxiety, stress, frustration. And the Tiger King kind of just let us cut loose and eat popcorn and feel a lot better about ourselves. And so
did you see the meme of like someone whispering, or it was President Trump whispering to one of his advisors, and one of his advisors says, what are we going to do, Mr. President, about the coronavirus? And he says, release the Tiger documentary.
Thank you, President
Seriously.
Trump.
Seriously.
That's so
like,
funny, though.
For all of that, and I love this discussion, and I think, of course, you should have these discussions with your from social distancing on Zoom with your coworkers or over the phone with your friends or over FaceTime. But really, though, those are 7 hours of my life that I'm not going to be able to get back.
We're well spent.
I just want to make sure that for all the controversy, for people that are, like you said, Corbin, either trolling you or frustrated about this or mad about something we said on the podcast or didn't say on the podcast, take that and do something with it. Like,
yes.
7 hours of your life was wasted on this just crazy story. So learn something from it. Get something out of it. Educate yourself. Educate your friends. Learn more about tigers in the wild, accredited zoos. Learn more about what a good sanctuary is versus a bad sanctuary. Learn about cub petting. I mean, it doesn't – it just educate yourself. And I know for one, like I'm going to, those 7 hours, I'm going to give them back to tiger conservation and I'm going to go get more experts. I'm going to try to make up for, the, like I said, the 7 hours of my life I'll never get back. And I just hope that out of all the speculation or gossip or whatever it is that all this brings about, is it can either bring about some change in your own life or how you see things, or maybe, as Chris pointed out, maybe with legislation, we can at least start somewhere of trying to fix this problem by either contacting your senators or understand right now the county that you live in. What are the laws? Is could there be a tiger next door?
Yeah.
And
there could be.
There's another point I want to bring up. And I know we covered this in a podcast, on your podcast, and you guys so graciously let me share it on my podcast. So our last roundtable, we did Why Zoos Matter, because a lot of people will see this. And there are a lot of people out there who don't like zoos. They want to see all the zoos shut down. And in my IGTV, Angie, and I know you watched it, and I wanted to touch on this, but there's so many people out there who are like, oh, I don't like zoos, and I just want all the animals to live. You know, they just belong in the wild. And I want to make a point that the wild is a – it really doesn't exist anymore. There are very few places, and it's dangerous. Can we talk about this for just a second? Because, yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and John and I talk about this, which we'll be releasing following up this in, this roundtable, because, you know, I'm unbiased. I've never worked for a zoo. I did help John teach some classes. I taught some zookeepers. You know, that's my only admission. But I've never been employed by an AZA institution or anything like that. I'm a scientist. I'm trained in animal physiology. Horses were my number one species, and then I branched out into endangered species research, seeing all these trends going on around the planet. After doing this podcast for 2.5 years, telling the stories of 100 species that are barely, you know, a lot of them barely hanging on, if not extinct now, especially after the Australian wildfires, if zoos went away, a lot of species would go away. We would lose a ton of biodiversity on Earth. They are doing some of the most critical work in research and in conservation. They're working with people out in the field. Like I said, they send their zookeepers out in the field. They are a huge voice in getting people to buy in to animal conservation and education. So from an unbiased scientific perspective, if we didn't have zoos, we're screwed. The food web, the oceans, the landmass, everything. Because like you said, only about 23% of the wild remains before we all became an industrialized species. We've exploited everywhere. Roads, you name it. You know, tearing down forests, all those things. So zoos are critical to maintaining what species they're lifeboats. They're lifeboats for a lot of species.
Right. And just to add to that a little bit, I think for people that want to make a sweeping statement of I don't like zoos, is as we've discussed, they're not all made the same. It's a lot of gray area. And zoos, a lot of people that pour their heart and their souls and their lives into being keepers and curators or veterinarians or nutritionists at zoos or whatever, they get a ton of training. And all this started happening, and zoos kind of got together, a lot of the bigger zoos, and said, yeah, I mean, the USDA and regulations suck. Like, they aren't helpful. They're like, give them fresh water once a day and make sure they can turn around in their enclosure. Like, they're pretty bare minimal, as we talked about earlier in the podcast. And so that's why the AZA accreditation was started, is actually the zoos, the people that work at the zoos, the higher ups and the lower downs and everybody in between, they were like, we want to increase the animal welfare. The government's not going to do it. So we want to figure out how to raise the bar and how to make sure these animals have the best care, the most room, the most enrichment, enriching lives, that they're not inbred, that they're conserved in the wild. That's a big mission of AZA accredited facilities. And so it was actually the zoos people coming together and saying, we're going to raise the bar because the government's not going to do it. So that's what it's all about. And every year the bar just gets raised higher and higher and higher and higher. And zoos are listening to people, the naysayers, and trying to continually improve their quality. I mean, anybody who's a little bit older probably has seen the change that a lot of the zoos have taken in the past 20 to 30 years as far as getting rid of bars and cages and cement and all that's gone. It's all natural and not every zoo everywhere. That's once again why I think you shouldn't put it – you can't put it into a box. And I think the other thing that's really important to point out about accredited zoos – and I'm not as familiar with sanctuary accreditation, so I can't talk about that as much. But the biggest thing is that they encourage, or they, I shouldn't say they encourage, they demand financial accountability in your institution. Because honestly, if something happened to a zoo director or a zoo president or whatever at the, an accredited facility, nothing would change. During coronavirus 2020 at these accredited facilities, besides the public, of course, not being allowed at most of the, if not all, the accredited zoos, nothing has changed for their animals.
Yeah, the animals are fine.
The care is fine. And that's because accredited zoos and aquariums have endowments. They have, and that's a fancy word as far as my understanding, is money in the bank, right? They got money in the bank. For emergency situations to care for their animals. Now, fast forward to what's happened to Joe's zoo.
You're right.
Since he's been locked away.
Yeah.
And so these it's called contingency plans. So accredited zoo facilities, and I would imagine sanctuaries as well, have contingency plans, not only about financial issues or responsibility, but about emergency situations, tornadoes, hurricanes, they've got protocol for that. They have protocol for an animal escape, right? Which they have protocol for training their employees. Well, I mean, obviously the zoo when you were 13 volunteering broke every one of those.
they did. And I want to say there was a point in the documentary where they were running low on funds. They were running out of food for the animals and supplies where Joe's like, we're going to have to start breeding more tigers and selling tigers. I mean, they didn't have a plan.
There's no contingency plan. That the one shot where he's looking at the tornado coming down the road.
Oh, like, my God.
Why aren't you, securing your animals? I mean, and who knows? Maybe he was. That could just be, once again, the documentary, making stuff dramatic or whatever. I don't know. But what I do know is the amount of paperwork and time and effort and protocol. Oh, my gosh. Email after protocol after protocol after protocol for working in an AZA-accredited zoo is for these contingencies. So they don't go out of business. So the animals have the best care.
Just to double up on that, with Angie talking, it's, you know, these animals have 24-hour vet care. They're have nutritionists on staff. So when you see Joe dumping all that meat, expired meat from Walmart, I'm sitting there thinking, not only is the meat expired for a reason, that's all a lot of it's processed. So it's high nitrates, salts, other things that are not proper for a cat, a big cat. So their diets are horrific. So again, welfare, big welfare issue there. Where at zoos, you know, these animals are fed balanced diets. They share information. They do research. Angie, one of the best, one of my favorite interviews Angie did was with Dr. Barney Long, who's heading up the Sumatran Rhino Project. And I think this is a big point to make. They brought in all the Sumatran rhinos in the wild, all, 60 of them that are left in the world?
They're trying to. I don't know if they have.
They're trying to into Bomas, right? They're trying to bring them in under human care.
Yeah. They're all spread out over the island and they can't find each other.
Yeah, so they're trying to get them together to save them. Mm-hmm. He's leading that project. Everything they've learned to take care of those rhinos, they learned from, zoos.
Yeah.
So
Cincinnati Zoo for bred a Sumatran rhino. They're using all of that information. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Dr. Terry Roth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Please hire me. Hint, hint. Somebody.
That male rhino. So tip them off.
You guys, can I read you? This might be super controversial. This is an anonymous message from someone who works at a very credible AZA facility, and the reason why they're not speaking out is they're afraid they don't want to lose their job.
Okay.
But this is a safe space here. So I'm going to read this. Well, I mean, I think so. Gosh, I mean, no one can fire us right now, but I don't want to get sued.
That's true.
Okay, it is a little long. I might have to cut this out of the pod, but let me know what you guys think, okay? Because I really want to touch with this. This person said, hey, I saw your post, and I'm not sure about how deep you're getting into this tiger stuff, but I just wanted to share some info. I really don't feel comfortable publicly commenting. I have worked for AZA and non-AZA, and I have an issue with the divide that is being wedged between all animal care facilities. I have not watched the series yet, but I can't imagine it will reflect well on the industry, which needs more support than ever. Also, with places like the Oklahoma City Zoo spewing the same AZA rhetoric that they are the gold standard and only qualifying standard for proper animal care, I'm impelled to remind people that AZA has surplus animals to Carol at Big Cat Rescue. However, I understand that we all need to work together more than ever. I'm just frustrated by the hypocrisy of some AZA facilities, knowing full well the importance of all facilities to improving our animal care practices, successful population management, and our reconstruction of our public image as an industry. He just said, yeah, anyway, he just goes more into this. But he says, most larger facilities might have the same space with the nicer looking exhibits and even better vet care. But at night, all the houses come to night houses. I don't oppose this or disagree with this. The space is usually more sparse, less natural, and smaller. My point is, the cat at the smaller facility doesn't care if it's sleeping on a wooden plank or $1 million fake rock wall, as long as it's well cared for and stimulated. Blah, 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 blah. The fancy expensive exhibits are for guests and hopefully benefit animals, but are not absolutely necessary. Awesome. Thanks for all the education. Sorry, that was so long-winded.
No. No, I think, yeah.
Angie's got a good perspective from being.
Yeah, the writer brings up a lot of fair points. I don't think that there is any necessarily silver bullet as far as there's problems in all institutions. Nothing, you know, you can't get everything perfect. I think it's striving for it. And I, being a scientist, and this is kind of what drove me to, when after being a zookeeper, of wanting to go back to graduate school to get some more degrees and learn more about the science and scientific method, is a lot of times we anthropomorphize and assume this is how an animal feels. Or this is safe for an animal, or this isn't, or this is an animal is happier when it's in a beautiful, large, grassy exhibit versus being in a concrete cage. And so I am a big supporter in AZA accredited zoos that is doing research to try to answer some of these questions, like, is the cat happier here or there? Or, for instance, big cats are often prone to stereotypic behaviors, pad or pacing back and forth. Mm. A lot of carnivores are. And so asking the question, can we reduce these stereotypical behaviors if we give them a larger exhibit, if we give them a smaller exhibit, if we give them a friend, if we don't give them a friend, if we give them enrichment 3 times a day? And so they're doing research to try to back up some of these speculations about, yes, what it's basically welfare science. Mm-hmm. And it's really just starting to emerge. Mm-hmm. And so I think what the writer is talking about is very valid. And those are questions I wish somebody would hire me to answer, because we don't necessarily know what might make one cat happier, might not. Right. Maybe. So it's hard to make sweeping generalizations of, yes, all AZA accredited zoos are perfect and anything who's not accredited is horrible. I don't think we can say that, because we don't have the science to back that up. And I think what I'm an advocate for is we need more of that. We need to look at really big welfare topics as far as the animals, or let's just say the big cat feeling safe, the big cat, the stress, the cortisol levels, their nutrition, their breeding. Like, some of these animals aren't breeding. Why are they not breeding? Does it have to do with nutrition? Does it have to do with stress? Does it have to do – all these things are only going to be answered through science, and that takes time and money. And they're, as your reader pointed out, or the writer pointed out, like, we're just wasting time if we're pitting each other against each other. It's not helping the animals by saying, I'm better than her, or I'm better than them, or we're better than them. I mean, I think there's some things that we can all potentially agree on that probably aren't any good, like pulling a cub from its mom when it's an hour old or not even.
Yeah.
And that's a tiger living in a six by, literally USDA allowed 6x6 or whatever it is. Like, I think we can all agree that that is
wrong.
Probably not in the animal's best interest. So yeah. I think it's coming together on some of those terms and realizing the differences we have. Some might be able to be answered by science. Some might not be. Mm-hmm. But in general, the welfare of the animal is, I do believe in my heart, and I'm sure this writer does too, the person who wrote in, that the mission of AZA accredited zoos is to bring about good welfare for the animals, and they're always working on improving on how to do that. However, that doesn't mean that a non-accredited zoo that's doing everything right or most things right mm-hmm. or is trying to do things right has bad intentions. I think they have good intentions as well. Just like Joe and Carol have good intentions. I think they just got misconstrued along the way, quite obviously. And then there was no checks and balances. There was no board of directors. There's no financial responsibility. So
there's some big differences, too. I think Angie makes a great point as far as behavioral science or animal welfare science is a big emerging field. I think Brookfield Zoo is leading the charge in that. I think they have a graduate program now that they're instituting. So do AZA, like Angie admitted it from the very beginning, does AZA need to do things better or are these accredited institutions? Absolutely. And they are. But to, you know, back to those comments, I think what that person's trying to get at is, there are good rescues. I've seen great personal zoos mm-hmm. that label themselves as rescues, beautiful exhibits, animals well taken care of. But like Angie said, where's the checks and balances? Are they breeding? What are they breeding for?
You know, are there contingency plans, things yeah. like that?
Like if the owners died.
And here's the deal too. I mean, if I had it my way, and this is of course just my opinion, disclaimer, but I would love all wild animals living in the wild. If it was a perfect world, I don't think we could all just go on safari in Africa and see them at Kruger or go to Yellowstone and notice that I mentioned national parks because there is really no quote unquote wild very much anymore. And so I unfortunately my utopia or that's not real. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Not in my lifetime, probably ever. So, I do think that accredited zoos have a really big part in animal conservation, and that's what I'm about.
All right, you guys, thank you.
We can talk about this all day.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and having this roundtable. I love, you know, your expert opinions on this, and hopefully we'll get people talking. And, you know, but I thank you for taking the time to do the research and trying to get a good message out there.
Yeah, like I said, take that passion that you're having with when you're chit-chatting with friends or maybe even on social media and take that passion and do something with it. Try to educate yourself more, educate people, look at what's happening as far as tigers and other big exotic big cats are concerned in your local area, in your state, and check out the Big Cat Safety Act. And, you know, if it is something you think is worth enforcing, you better tell your senators, because like I said, it doesn't seem to have a very big chance of passing. And I think it's a start in the right direction, my understanding of it. And I feel like if the certain states aren't going to do anything, then maybe it needs to be done federally. I don't know. But that's the conversation that needs to be had. And whether Carol did it or didn't do it, or whether Joe is going to be freed in 5 years or not and opening up another cub petting thing. Like those are, you just want to make sure you're using your time constructively. We all have a little more time on our hands.
I think they're talking about season 2 of Tiger King, which if they have the content, they should go for it. Cause it's obviously blowing up.
And just in my closing, I think the biggest thing to remember is tigers in the wild are suffering. I mean, there are very few left, and there are people out there like SONARTA, World Wildlife Foundation, that are fighting hard to preserve what's left in the wild. And I think we can't lose focus of that. It's fun to talk about these, you know, the drama, But I really think we need to focus in on what's going on in the wild and protect all wildlife. And
yeah, zoos we really didn't even touch on tiger trade and tiger body parts. And I mean, that it's just it's they need our help and they need education. And maybe just maybe the beautiful, ironic part of this whole Tiger King blowing up on Netflix is that maybe just maybe. Mm-hmm. Some tigers will be saved of it in the wild, and that would be awesome. Or some, you know, baby tiger cubs will be saved here in the States that were maybe going to be mysteriously go away or whatever. That to me would make all of the, you know, the series worth it.
Yeah, and I'd just say my final thing is never, never, never pay to pet a cub, ever. You just support it. You're supporting exploitation. And that is not a good place to send your money to help animals.
And also realize that it's very easy for anybody and everyone to say, like, oh, all the money's going to conservation. Like, look into it. Where? And just like you said earlier mm-hmm. in the podcast, you can make a claim it's going to conservation. Okay, that's great. What organization? What have you done? You know what I mean? Like, look mm-hmm. into it. And it doesn't, Angie, you said this earlier, just do a quick Google search. If you see an animal park or a zoo, quick Google search. You can look on TripAdvisor and you'll know pretty soon if it's a good facility or one maybe you should avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Corbin. So good to see you.
Thank you. So good to see you guys. Thanks for having us. Yes. Yes.
Do you have what series should we be watching on Netflix now?
Oh, so my wife's going to kill me, but she wants, because I'm making her wait, but I guess Ozark season 3 is mm-hmm. out, and I guess that's supposed to be really good. I haven't even seen season 2. So.
Yeah,
I
watched season 2.
Okay, so plenty of stuff to keep us busy.
Yes. Yep. All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
All right. Thank you.